The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. And so they lived happily ever after. Makes real good nursery rhyme copy, but sort of like finding out about Santa Claus, young people soon become aware of the fact that living happily ever after seldom occurs. One disturbing trend in our modern societies that has government leaders worried is divorce. Law enforcement officials are concerned about the resultant crime, juvenile delinquency, and violence, and the fact that many homicides involve husbands and wives in the United States and the so-called have nations of affluence, as well as many other free countries elsewhere. But the fact is that something is deeply wrong with our marriages today, that our homes are sick. In this series of programs on the world tomorrow, I have proved conclusively that which leads up to marriage is the problem with marriage today. Now, there are many factors involving it, but as I've said repeatedly, it's almost as if with one voice that many of these marital counselors, divorce lawyers, and others will tell you that American courtship, now it is true also in Britain and Australia, that our courtship, our dating, our way of selecting a mate, that which leads up to marriage is that which is wrong with marriage. I've given you repeated statistical evidence, written in lessons of misery by divorcees, by young children from divorced and broken homes, of the empty, wretched, wasted lives of youth, today disturbing trends that are threatening the very basis of our free society, and continually we've seen the statistical evidence of what is wrong with our homes today. So we've been analyzing this past series of programs that I want to try to conclude this time, the dating customs and the habits of young America, Scandinavia, Great Britain, South Africa, Australia, and the free world. First, we saw conclusively by letting the kids tell us themselves about the whimsical ideas of casual boy-girl meetings and of dating, the romanticized notions about what kind of boy or girl he or she would like to date, and how none of the ideas that we heard took into real serious consideration the practical matters that might lead toward marriage. It was always a matter of what's going to make the most pleasant evening, who is going to be the most attractive, who will make my friends the most envious, what will be the smoothest, coolest, nicest, most exciting evening for me. But whether or not he or she was a smooth talker, a fine dancer, a cool dresser, or a great surfer had nothing whatsoever to do with the real deep and serious matters about what kind of a mate were they going to make. So we've been talking continually about dating, and I've been giving 7 major keys about how to select a mate, or in other words, 7 living laws about how to be a success in marriage, because after all, marriage is intended to be the deepest, warmest, most fully gratifying and satisfying relationship in the human sphere, and it's also intended to be the very building block of any free society. It's intended to be the most beautiful and rewarding experience, one that produces everything that is permanent, everything that smacks of security, of stability, maturity, responsibility, and love. As I was showing in the last program, few people seem to know the difference between love and lust today. It's as if educators, entertainers particularly, and our entertainment field has to come in for a good share of the blame, and some of this, at least when you analyze what it's done to our way of thinking and some of our modern customs, seem to feel that this so-called tingle up and down people's spine is a thing that a young 14 or 15-year-old person recognizes, and immediately upon recognizing it, they rush off to the altar to get married. But of course, the statistics about how many of those same young hopefuls are going right back down that aisle to get a divorce are really shocking and frightening. I've given this stats over and over again on this program. I don't want to take further time with it. If you haven't heard the preceding series of broadcasts, then at any rate, write in for these articles I've mentioned every time on how to have a happy marriage and the one on how to solve family arguments. For those of you who are married, now I am working on a booklet. Don't write in for it yet, but I am working on a booklet which will put together all of these 7 major points about dating. As soon as it's ready, we will be announcing it on the World Tomorrow program and in the pages of the Plain Truth magazine. So your best bet is to be sure to have your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine, and then you will see an announcement when that booklet is ready. Don't write for it yet, but write for the Plain Truth instead. and I will have it ready, fully illustrated, with all the graphs and the charts, the statistical analyses of the problems and what the young people are saying about it themselves, and then chapter by chapter, these seven major keys about how to select a mate. Now, I'm not announcing that that booklet is ready. I'm just beginning to organize it and get the material together, and it's going to take some time. But you'll have advance notice of when it will be available if your name is on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. And every month there are articles coming out that are very vitally important to youth, to married couples, to children. We have the Bible story for children in every issue, but of course constantly every number we have up-to-the-moment articles about world conditions in the light of prophecy. In the light of predicted events which were to come to pass today, what the meaning of the news really is, what is behind it, what is the outcome going to be, the analysis of the news, not just what is happening today, but what will happen in the future. In the current number, for example, for the first of the new year, Inside Communist Romania, continued an eye-opening report of a 2,500-mile tour behind the Iron Curtain by Plain Truth editors. And here are the facts about a new nationalism sweeping Romania. What that means to Eastern Europe and behind the Iron Curtain countries. Also another article written from on the spot in Düsseldorf, West Germany. The alarming results of German state elections and the recent crisis in Bonn. Where is Germany headed today? Where is Germany headed now? I don't care where you live, you've seen some of the shocking headlines of recent date about suspected neo-Nazism inside Germany. Here's what is really happening, written from there. Another article with de Gaulle in the South Pacific. What is behind the secret French atomic program in the Pacific, written by a regional editor from on the spot. Another article, how you can be happy. People say Happy New Year. Well, it never had a more hollow sound than it does this year. So write in for the Plain Truth magazine, and then we will announce when this booklet is ready on dating and marriage, and you'll have it. In the meantime, you can write for these articles I've announced on how to have a happy marriage and how to solve family arguments. Now, many of you are married, and your marriages just aren't anywhere near as happy as you wish they could be. Many of you are living in situations where you know, as well as I do, you're on a collision course, where, given enough time, you're headed right for a crossroads where one or the other of you is simply going to say, I can't stand it anymore, I'm going to quit. You're living in a marriage or a home where it's virtually like a sort of a guest hotel or a big motel where communication is all but broken down, where you don't share any of the sweet little nothings and the intimate moments of conversation and niceties that you used to share when you were young, hopeful, still dating. Many people have analyzed it that marriage is sort of like putting the dessert before the meal. It's like dating is the dessert, and then comes the meal, and it's nowhere near so pleasant. That's not the way it should be. It could be the most wonderful, beautiful, and really romantically stimulating experience of human life if people were just willing to make it that way. And there are laws that regulate it. There are laws that guarantee marital success, real joy and happiness, fun and excitement. The true and the wonderful enjoyment that is real and far deeper and more rewarding than all the empty daydreams and hazy ideas that motion picture romances and TV series and novels in the entertainment world may have given you. And those laws live. They are alive. They're active. You break them, they exact a penalty. You obey them, and they give you fantastic blessings and fulfillment and rewards. Now, I've been going through a series of programs in which we've discussed all of the major, shall I say, factors or the great keys to selecting a mate. First of all, we took into account physical health. And the reason I took that into account first is because that's what most people's minds happen to be upon. The physical appearance is something else, again, I'm coming to, but physical health with relationship to the kind of children you're going to have and what your wife or your husband's going to look like 5 years after your marriage and 10 years after your marriage, what they're going to look like later. It's very important, and people ought to think about it. Then we talked about mental health and about the tremendous incidence of mental aberrations and psychoses and mental illness today. 1 out of 10. 1 out of 12 is going to spend his life in a mental hospital or part of it. 1 out of 10 so afflicted by mental illness that psychiatrists claim he needs treatment. You need to realize it. And then we talked about The third major key, heredity and environment, or in other words, background and breeding, of considering the background, the kind of stock, where they come from, what are their parents. We talked about personality and emotional development and maturity, something few people seem to have very much of anymore. People today, as almost never before, simply cannot control their emotions. People are frustrated. They're living in an emotional vacuum. They can't seem to get control of their fears and their worries, their hostilities, their antisocial tendencies. Well, it's time to discuss these things and find out about it, and find out if you're compatible and you're really balanced emotionally and mentally prior to the time you say, I do. Then we came to this thing of religion. And religion is very vitally important. Is the fellow or the girl you're dating religious? Do they go to church? If so, which one? Have they ever given it any thought beyond just casual acquaintance with other boys and girls their own age? You know, sometimes in later life, religious and faith and philosophical ideas and feelings about life, about what man is, about death, about some afterlife, if there be any, about sickness and disease, about the loss of a loved one, about an accident, about such things as God, man, the soul, heaven, hell, and so on. People find deep philosophical and religious differences exist sometimes after marriage. Now, you know, today in casual conversation, most people are a little bit fearful to discuss religion, politics, race. They like to stick to the weather or the latest Aggie joke or something. They like to stick to some innocuous thing about likes and dislikes. And you will find young people out on a date like to talk about certain things. And they insist that the people they date do not talk about previous dates. They insist that they're compatible, easy to get along with, and so on, that they don't embarrass them, that maybe he brings an extra handkerchief and she doesn't always load him down with things to carry, that they show up on time, that they don't have obnoxious physical habits. Now, I don't know who was saying this in every case. I look at some of these young people that you see today, and you just so badly sometimes want to get a hold of this guy and stick his head in the washtub and get a great big stiff bristled brush and give him a good scrubbing, you know, just to clean him up a little bit. But this is only true in some cases, maybe not all. And then, of course, right afterward, you wish for a pair of shears or a razor and trim him up and give him a nice, neat pair of cords or Levi's, and a nice new pair of shoes and a crisp shirt and a nice, neat haircut, and make him go bathe and brush his teeth and wash and scrub and comb his hair, and then take a look at him, and maybe you'd see what he really looks like. But be that as it may, for some reason, even some young girls feel romantically attracted to young fellows who look like young girls. Now, I can't understand that, but of course, each to his own, as they say. But what about this thing of religion? Do you ever discuss it? Have you ever talked to someone that you may feel fond of about the Bible? Have you ever brought up things about spiritual ideas or notions about philosophical ideas about life? Have you ever sat around and discussed whether or not he or she believes in evolution? Whether or not you believe there is a God? Whether or not you believe that God is alive today or whether he's dead? Whether you believe ideas about religion or the Bible should have anything whatsoever to do with the way you live and conduct your life, you know, this could become quite important later in rearing children. If you find that even though subjugated and put underneath right now and dating, the wife maybe has been reared in a home where there was a certain religious conviction. Maybe she's even a member of a certain church, and maybe that church teaches pretty strenuous things about child rearing. And maybe again, maybe it teaches nothing at all. Maybe it's vice versa. But of course, here you are out in a motion picture at the malt shop or with the gang, and in 6 short weeks or so on, and this happens all too often, why, you're married. 2 years later, you've got one child and another one on the way. And you find out he or she has some pretty weird ideas, at least the way you look at it, about rearing a child according to certain religious beliefs. Now, isn't it time to discuss that before you get married? That's why I put religion as one of the major headings in these 7 keys to selecting a mate. Now, you could call it philosophy because it has to do with faith, with ideas and ideals, with superstition or the lack of it, with religion, and discussing these big areas of life. Find out whether there are any vast philosophical and religious differences that exist. and talk it over and come to a meeting of minds. Now, for instance, just to tell you what some of the young high school people are saying about this question, is God dead, that made such headlines in the last few years in the United States and much of the rest of the world. It was asked recently to some high school students in Oregon, and the boy said, personally, I think God is dead because I haven't had anything or anyone prove to me that he's alive. Now, that boy should not marry a girl who has researched, who's given it the time of day, and who has practically and technically and scientifically proved to herself that there is a God, you see, unless or until he lets go of his nutty notion, or at least gives it the time of day to look into what she feels she's proved, or vice versa, convinces her that she hasn't proved it, but does it scientifically, fair and square, on the honest, up and up, look into it for yourself. A boy said, it depends about this thing of is God dead. He said perhaps God was never alive to begin with. Of course, for many centuries now, the concept of God has been alive in people's minds. However, whether or not God has actually ever been alive is debatable, he said. He said. But he didn't have any proof. He just thought. Now, another boy said, I believe religion is on an individual basis. For me, a personal God is dead. That is, he said, for him. I think, he said, there is a supreme being. He would have been better off to say, I guess. But I'm inclined to think, he said, he is divorced from the affairs of mankind. And a girl said, no, I don't think God is dead. I think your conscience will tell you whether or not he is dead. For most people, God can be felt, she said, in their conscience. To show you the various ideas, now I don't know whether young people are discussing this on a date, I frankly doubt it. They do once in a while, and it depends on the individual, of course, they differ. But much of the time, when you see the things young people say publicly, and that find their way into articles on the subject, in the women's and the men's magazines, and Reader's Digest, and what have you, they're tending to veer away from that type of discussion. Now, more and more, on the campuses of our modern universities, people are discussing mores and laws and principles, but more and more it is along the line of rebellion toward the status quo, and along the line of investigating everything that smacks of permanence, of legality, of morality, of stability, of law, of order, or of authority. And so more and more it takes on the sort of an aura of a discussion of just whatever appeals to you, whatever notion seems to be attractive, seems to be adopted by the majority of young people your own age, but not with a mind of investigating and searching and researching and finding out the real truth. So you see these supposed intellectuals sitting around with long hair on a pad discussing any and everything, especially the policies of the war in Vietnam, or maybe the social revolution of today, or maybe the racial problems or religion or what have you. But all of this business of just the way it seems to me, and I think and I suppose, is absolutely nothing more than a hoot and a whirlwind so far as its ultimate value. So far as finding out, does it work? Is it practical? Can you prove it? Now, a boy said, I believe that God is dead. God was created, he said, by man, with all his grandeurs, at some period when man was in jeopardy. Or in other words, needed security. Presently, man feels his sovereignty and worth, for man is directing his arrogance in all directions, not just to his inferiors. So this boy said he has the ability to do whatever he wants. Therefore, man feels that he does not need a God. Now, all these youngsters are doing, my friend, is trying to put into words what their elders have told them, remember. You can't blame teenagers for saying things like that. As I've said in this program, in what comes into most people's minds when you say the word God, you bet he's dead. That God, this figment of men's imaginations, never lived in the first place. But if you mean the God of the Bible, the God who is the Father of Jesus Christ, if you mean the great Creator God who said he made all men of one blood, the one who said he created all things, the one who wrote with his own finger the Ten Commandments, if you mean that God, oh no, that God's not dead. The very fact of his name, God, means ever-living, eternal, life self-inherent within himself, a creator being who made all things and presently stands back of them and sustains them. Oh, that God's not dead. That God is very much alive, a personal being, a God with a great plan. The God who invented marriage, who laid down the laws that make it work. The God in whom, if people believed, and especially married couples and young prospective married couples, a deep conviction and a belief in that God and an obedience to his laws would override many of these other handicaps that people experience in marriage. That's why this is a very important point, this thing of religion. Of finding out whether or not one or the other believes in God, has ever given us the time of day to prove it one way or the other, and is willing to live by the laws that are set down in the Bible relating to life. Anything from child-rearing to the kind of food you put on the plate for the husband. Yes, religion is important, and a lot of people like to avoid it and not talk about it, but it should be talked about before marriage. Now, the next and the sixth point is romantic attraction, and this, I put six, it has a significant number, I think, and because also it is probably the least important. You know, I say that, I imagine rather shockingly to some people, based upon a tremendous pile of statistical evidence and the course of the history of mankind. I say that based upon the great laws that regulate marriage, because it is an absolute fact that if all these other things are first present, physical health, mental health, right heredity, or at least mutual and compatible heredity and environment, personality and emotional development and maturity, and then like religion and the right religion proves, then there will automatically be plenty of romantic attraction, because it will grow. It will start as a little seed, and it will grow and become deeper and fuller and greater and more rewarding and warmer as every single year goes by. And by the time you've been married 12 years, you will be so much more in love with that creature than you were at 1 year. There's no comparison. And at 12 plus 10... 22 or 24, you'll love her or him a lot more than you did way back at only 12 years. And that is intended to grow deeper and fuller as every single year goes by. Rightly conducted, rightly entered into, and with these laws that do live and act taken into account, that's exactly what will be your reward in marriage. Not that you're going to get it, because you're going to be giving so much that you'll be only conscious of giving, and you won't really be aware of the fact that you're getting so much in return. That's why I won't even spend very much time on the sixth point of romantic attraction, because that's what most people put first. And it's the only point they're ever concerned with, and they forget all of these other very important points about selecting a date. Now, seventh, and last, and again, the old proverb, certainly not least, no, perhaps the most important, and if you understood the meaning of the number seven, completion, perfection, it is to seek wise counsel. And the wisest counsel you could possibly seek is the counsel of a great spirit being who does exist and whose existence can be proved and to whom you have direct access, and that is to say, you should pray about your marriage. You should pray about your dating habits. You ought to pray to seek wise counsel and guidance and to have it revealed to you whether or not you ought to marry this person or the other. You ought to seek wise counsel from your parents. You ought to take them into your confidence. Other married couples whom you know intimately and who know you well, but who are mature enough to be able to give you some wise counsel. Not some embittered character that's going to say, "Don't get married, look what happened to me." Not some lantern-jawed battle axe that's divorced three or four and says, "No, I hate all men." Too much of that kind of counsel is given. You ought to get wise counsel from a couple who are truly in love after about a dozen or so years, who do have a stable home, who have happy children, and get counsel with them about George or Joe or Dick or Tom or Harry or Jane or Jill or Martha or somebody else, and find out what their opinions and ideas are. Evaluate them. That doesn't mean you're going to follow them. That doesn't mean you're asking them to make up your mind for you. That doesn't mean you're going to automatically take their advice, but you ought to seek it. You ought to get advice from relatives. You ought to think about it. Now, you know, the more you wait, the more you think about it, and the more you go over these seven major keys to a successful marriage, the better your chances for success. But let me tell you that even utilizing every one of these is not going to guarantee a thing unless you yourself will look into the origin of marriage unless you will find what is marriage, why is marriage, who invented it, and what are the laws that will guarantee its success. These are seven keys about dating, seven keys about selecting a mate, which if you will follow, if you will observe, guarantee you will marry the right person. But guaranteeing you will stay with that right person, that your marriage will grow deeper and more loving and more rewarding, well, that's something else again. Because remember, when I began this series, I talked about the very first marriage in all history, Adam and Eve. Perfect physical health, perfect mental health, perfect heredity and environment. They both came from the same source. Perfect personality and emotional development and maturity, because they both started even. And their religion? Well, it was only one. They had it taught to them. Romantic attraction? Plenty of that. No question about it. No clothes. Seeking wise counsel? Well, they didn't even have to. It was an arranged marriage. And nobody else around to compete with. They had every last one of these things going for them. But they forgot the biggest thing of all. That marriage is all give. And human nature is all get. That you've got to like as well as love. You've got to give as well as get. That you have to cultivate and carefully care for a marriage. You've got to make it work. You can't just assume that once you're married, it's going to go along in its own accord. How long has it been since some of you husbands took your wife a bouquet of flowers or a box of candy or something else that might be better for her health? How long has it been since you simply put down your paper and smiled and said, you know, honey, I really love just sitting here with you? How long has it been since you've just given a simple complimentary word about how nice your companionship is? How much you appreciate living together. How about this thing of admiration, trust, companionship, liking to be with one another? Cultivate it. You got into it. It's worth staying together. Work at it. It's not something you want to just let hang and go to pot. Talk. Talk over your problems. Seek counsel and advice. Now write in for these articles. A lot of you are sort of hanging on the precipice of divorce. You're about to break up a home where you've got young children. Their whole lives and futures are at stake. You've lived together this long. Give it one last try. Write for these articles on how to have a happy marriage. This article goes into these keys and laws in the Bible that talk about the very basis for right marriage, how to make it successful, how to have a happy marriage, and the article on how to solve family arguments, and that method is guaranteed. It's absolutely guaranteed. And then be sure to get your name on a mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. And then when this booklet is finished, we have it off the press, why, you'll be given the announcement, whether I'm able to announce it on the air, whether we put it in a box in the magazine, you'll see it either way. So be sure to write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine and get these articles from behind the Iron Curtain, the one on the spot with De Gaulle in the South Pacific. Get these articles about how to really be happy and get the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, which always has a three-page radio log, letters to the editor from around the world. Readers in more than 140 nations are reading the Plain Truth magazine. Here's an article on how you can be happy. The article, Where is Germany Headed Now? The Plain Truth is 52 pages, full color, but absolutely without cost. It's free of charge to you if you send your name and address to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.